Good afternoon or good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday, 11-11-2020, 6 p.m. That means you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports. I am Hank Jones. You are with us on Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. We are here every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. Every Monday, Vito and Al bring you the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al. Mama Mia No Sharia, that's every Monday at 6, every Tuesday at 6. Eric, the Kafir, bringing you Radio Free Kafiristan. Every Thursday, I believe at 7, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays at noon, Andrew Herod with Islam in Focus, Conservative Casual Friday. Every Saturday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam. And then every Sunday, Eric is back, Eric the Kafir with Real Interfaith Dialogue. That one, you have to get an app. You have to, because of the nature of it, you got to get an app to go in and participate. You can listen, but to participate, you still have to get the app. Okay, there's a couple ways you can always interact with me. You can log in on Blog Talk Radio, come to the show, just through one of the live portals. Click on live. It tells you which we are, who we are, which is Global Patriot Radio. You can email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at hpolysports. I'm on Facebook, Hank Jones Polysports. And you can call the show. You can listen that way or you can interact. You can press 1 if you want to talk to me. That number, 319-527-6706. Again, 319-527-6706. Hit 1 means I see a little icon that says somebody wants to talk to you, Hank. Let's see. What's the latest on the presidential election? I don't know if there's a latest, really. We still don't have a president-elect is what it boils down to, no matter what the media has said and no matter what rallies have been held. The election is not certified. A little perspective on that. Mitch McConnell actually had to address the Senate and say that President Trump is within his right to do this. And like I said, a little perspective, Al Gore and George Bush, or George W. Bush, went at this for 37 days. It wasn't until the 11th hour before the Electoral College met that the Supreme Court finally stepped in and said, you got to stop this. Anyway, Erie, Pennsylvania, a postal worker, Richard Hopkins, alleged ballot fraud. Then he supposedly recanted, which probably made him the richest postal worker in history, if he did indeed recant. Now, Project Veritas posted a video on Twitter of Richard Hopkins saying he did not recant. There's actually no news yet on whether the DNC coffers have been reduced by any appreciable amount. But take heart, folks, because this could be a new get-rich-quick scheme. Think about it. Announce proof that you have election fraud, and then make money when you recant. I mean, God, if only the late infomercial magnates like Billy Mays and Don LaPree were still alive. Remember those guys? They'd sell you anything. They'd know how to monetize this, I swear. In other words, like if you see Vince from ShamWow infomercials ordering up a new series of paid programming infomercials on your cable guy, you can pretty much thank me for the brilliant idea. I can hear it. Do you want to get rich? Tired of your cheap flip phone while all your friends take selfies on smartphones? Act now. We'll even send a free smartphone from XYZ Wireless when you order our program, How to Milk the DNC with Voter Fraud Allegations. They'll never be able to be sure when you take videos and photos on our state-of-the-art smartphone. Call now to order. Operators are standing by. I mean, folks, I'm telling you, I just gave you a way to get rich quick. Yes, you're all welcome. Erie Postmaster Robert Weisenbach, who himself was probably going to be sporting some flashy jewelry and some threads pretty soon, he said the allegations are 100% false. and made by a worker who has recently been disciplined multiple times. Here is Wordsmith Weisenbach's statement. It's a written statement. I'm reading it as I saw it. Good evening, my friends. There has been awful things posted about the USPS, and here is my statement. The allegations made against me and the Erie Post Office are 100% false, made by an employee that was recently disciplined multiple times. He obviously acquired his writing chops from a satellite Penn State campus. The actual main campus at Penn State, up in State College, actually has an excellent English department. If brevity is the soul of wit, Weisenbach sounds like a funny guy. If this is word for word, he has also done a nice hatchet job on the Queen's English. And as I said, Project Veritas has posted a video on its Twitter feed of Hopkins saying he did not recant. So maybe it's just the Erie postmaster who's making out like a bandit here. It would stand to reason that Hopkins' boss, Mr. Weisenbach, would make the statement he did, since Hopkins' allegations include Weisenbach instructing postal employees of going out to collect ballots, as well as backdating postmarks to show a postmark on or before Election Day. Yeah, from the sound of this, someone's going to get Arkansas-ed here pretty soon. Yeah, Mr. Weisenbach, not a good look, dude. Not only do we have some recent deaths in the worlds of sports and entertainment and elsewhere. Boston Celtic legend Tommy Heinsohn has passed away. He's 86. He spent 60 years with the Celtics, literally, as a player, coach, or later as a broadcaster. He was actually a broadcaster, and then he came back to coach, and then a broadcaster when he was finished. He was with the team in one of those capacities for all 17 of the franchise's NBA championships. He's one of just four people in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame as both a player and a coach. In college, he led Holy Cross to the NIT championship in 1954. That was at a time when the NIT was as prestigious, if not more so, than the NCAA championship. He appeared in 10 NBA All-Star games, 6 as a player, 4 as a coach. He led the Celtics in scoring for 4 of those 10 NBA championship seasons. Guess what else? He actually beat out Bill Russell for Rookie of the Year. No cause of death was given, but rest in peace, Tommy Heinsohn. Welcome Indie Queen 86 to the room. She says, and I quote, "I hope and pray Trump gets his votes owed to him, you and me and a lot of other people." Legendary old school comedian and entertainer Norm Crosby, he passed away in Los Angeles last Saturday. He was 93. Died of heart failure. He started out in the New York Catskill Mountain area, resort area, also known as the Borscht Belt, made famous in a lot of Woody Allen movies, or several anyway. He later appeared numerous times on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Here's a good one. He made more appearances on Adam 12 than he did on The Love Boat. Seriously, somehow NBC or ABC let him get away. They didn't hold on. I mean, he didn't do any spots on Fantasy Island or Hotel. Hell, even L.A. Law and Roseanne managed to snag him for an appearance. To prove he was the master of malaprop, really all I can do for a final send-off is this. Rest in pieces, Norm Crosby. Those of you who know what malaprop is will get that. Those of you who don't will just think I was acting in poor taste. It's a real term, though. Really is. Former Oklahoma Sooners basketball coach Billy Tubbs. He died last week from leukemia at age 85. Probably known as much for his comb-over skills. Pretty much rivaled Lou Henson in that department. You may not know this name. A gentleman named Len Barry. And well, he died last Thursday at age of 85 of something called myelodysplasia. I don't know what that is. And you may not know who Len Berry is, but you will in a second. I could have taken candy from a baby. I could have dedicated that one to all Democrat poll workers across the country, taking candy from a baby. That's how it easy has been for them to pull the shenanigans they've pulled. Not a lot of way of breaking news. Al and Vito talked Monday, though. They were talking about the media reporting it and projecting the outcome. Here's further proof, an email. I get these emails from the U.S. Global Leadership Council. It's an entity that purports to be a nonpartisan entity. Yeah, right. You got to see these things. Yeah, they focused on the announcement as a reason to examine improved foreign policy under Joe Biden. Yeah, Indy Queen expressed here, she expressed voter fraud on Twitter and they suspended her account. Yeah, we'll talk about Twitter a little bit more in a few minutes. But yeah, it's an interesting concept and it's, you know, it's a lot of what I think of the polls. I don't think the polls are set up anymore strictly as a suppression instrument. That's certainly part of it. I mean, if you tell people in certain states that your candidate's down by 12%, their feeling is probably, oh, they won't vote. Why? Because think about it. Democrats wouldn't vote under that scenario. At least live Democrats wouldn't vote under that scenario, I should say. But what they do is they use these polls in other ways, too. As an example, well, we can justify. Remember, I talked about last week, Wisconsin, when the polls closed or when this counting stopped at midnight, President Trump was up by 108,000 with 188,000 votes left to cast. Joe Biden needed 79%. And I think he got, if not 100%, you know, factually, basically, effectively, he did. It was a tweet from Steve Dace that he actually retweeted. So, you know, that's how they can use the polls in other ways. They can use those polls to defend things like that. Well, like, see, we had it going that way. Remember, they were the AG of Pennsylvania pretty much telegraphed it when he said President Trump will probably be a leading election night, but when all the mail-in ballots and absentee ballots are counted, how would he know that? Seriously, how would he know that? I thought the whole point of the Democrats was to get people out to vote. You know, with the church buses that have campaign signs in them, nonprofit church buses, by the way. Indy Queen points out, state of Michigan, they have more votes cast than they have eligible voters. How's that work? Seriously, how does that work? Don't know. Hawkeye Mike sent me a text. Said Dolph Pulliam, Drake basketball legend. He was on the 1969 Drake Final Four team that lost to Lou Alcindor at UCLA. He just, I guess, recently passed away. 1-2-3 was the theme song. Did he recently pass away, Mike? I don't know. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it. Anyway, he said I probably never saw it because it was a local Des Moines station. That's true. I did not grow up in the Des Moines area. So there's a little humor from the Babylon Bee which, by the way, it could be argued that they are far closer to actual truth than any actual media outlet on the planet, literally. Let me read this to you. Journalists switch from offense to defense. With it looking more certain that Joe Biden has won the presidential election, journalists are now looking at a major shift in play, moving from their extremely aggressive offense against Donald Trump to focusing now on defense to protect Biden from a skeptical public. It's going to be a change, said journalism coach Homer Davis. Journalists strive for offense. They love to tear down. So having to protect a gaffe-prone old coot is going to be vastly different. Davis mentioned that the best defense is a good offense, so much of the effort to protect Biden will be to find and dock any of his critics. Davis explained, but journalists are going to have to fortify Biden as well, try to make him look smart and competent, and find any human angles to play up. Not as easy for someone who has been in government for nearly half a century and has barely anything human left in him at all. Journalists last played defense for the 8 years from 2009 to 2017 with mixed results, helping secure Barack Obama's reelection, but also seeing Republicans make huge gains in the midterms. Additionally, they were unable to protect Obama's legacy from the Hail Mary play that was Donald Trump. We just have to get in there and block, 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 said veteran defensive player Dave Weigel. Biden and the Democrats are going to make mistakes every day, and the job of us journalists is going to be to crush any of those stories before they get going. It's a whole different ballgame from round-the-clock coverage of every Trump tweet, but we're ready. Folks, you know, for those that don't know, the Babylon Bee is, you'll see their posts on Facebook. People share their stuff all the time because it's hilarious stuff. But I guess what I'm really saying is that the Babylon Bee would be the funniest and best lampoon site out there, except much of what they put forth is too damn close to the truth. So that it almost borders on not only on non-humor, but it becomes a nomination for them being the most somber, realistic site as well. And, you know, I'll tell you what, if you thought the media played lockdown defense during the Obama years, I'll tell you what, you're about to get a crash course in Buddy Ryan meets Brett Venables meets Norm Parker versus Georgia Tech in the 2010 Orange Bowl. That level of defense is what you're going to get. In essence, if you can relate it to football, you're about to see a defense that will have to be adept at defending the spread, the wishbone, the option, the triple option, the wing T, and whatever defenses tried against the 1984 Mississippi Valley State Delta Devils. For those of you who remember that, that was a team that had a quarterback named Willie Totten who threw 58 touchdown passes and a receiver named Jerry Rice who caught 27 of them. That is the level of defense we are about to see. I mean, you're going to, you know, for the media's sake, I guess I hope they're up to the task. I mean, you wish them well, but geez, I mean, it's true. They literally, Hawkeye Mike and I had a friend and roommate in college who, let's just say, he's pretty much the left side of the spectrum. He said to me while Biden was president that he goes, what I can't believe, I can believe he got elected. What I can't believe is the way the media totally covers for him. So who knows? There are three stories out of Georgia. Georgia GOP reps have demanded the resignation of Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. I doubt that he is any relation to Leonard Raffensperger, who coached the Iowa Hawkeyes in the 1950s. Anyway, he refused. But they wanted him to resign over the handling of the Georgia election process in both the presidential election and other elections. He did refuse. The second piece related to that, Georgia is now going to hardwire, i.e. they are going to hand count and review for their recount. And then here's the third story out of Georgia, and I'll tell you what, this one's repulsive, if you ask me. I mean, it just, this one goes a little bit past partisan, goes a little bit past political chicanery and shenanigans, if you will. There are Democrats across the country who are suggesting that out-of-state liberals move to Georgia to vote in the Senate runoff elections. You heard that. Democrats are suggesting that out-of-state Democrats temporarily move to Georgia for the sole purpose of helping to beat Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue in their runoff elections against John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. Those take place on January 5th. Moving to Georgia only to vote in an election would likely amount to fraud. The Georgia Secretary of State made that clear, and his office made it clear to the Wall Street Journal. Said they oversee voter registration. They declined to comment on how quickly someone could establish legal residency, but cited a state law. It is a felony to vote in Georgia elections if you are not a legal resident or if you are residing in the state briefly with the intention just to vote and then move away. So these are very sensitive issues. Election officials are going to pay attention to what is happening. People should be very careful about doing that. Also said people moving to Georgia briefly can work on campaigns and canvass for candidates, but voting in the state without the intention of staying would be considered fraud. But still, Democrats are suggesting it anyway. In November 6th, Democrat Andrew Yang, former presidential candidate Andrew Yang, he actually said, get ready to head to Georgia. I assume this was Twitter, but I don't know. And he said, to give Joe a unified government. He said, there isn't much time. The earliest date for absentee ballots to be mailed is November 18th. The registration deadline is December 7th. The in-person early voting begins December 14th. He actually tweeted this. Here's the tweet. The best thing we can do for Joe is to get him a Democratic Senate. There should be coordination of resources. Everyone who campaigned for Joe should get ready to head to Georgia. I'll go. It's the only way to sideline Mitch and give Joe a unified government. Doubling down, New York Times columnist Tom Friedman. I use the term columnist loosely. He told CNN that he hopes, quote, everybody moves to Georgia in the next month or two, registers to vote, and votes for these two Democratic senators. A local Democrat activist, Tamara Stevens, posted to her Facebook page that, quote, Northern Democrats should come on down. In response, State Representative Vernon Jones, a Democrat state representative but actually supported President Trump, he's asked Governor Brian Kemp to intervene. He said, out-of-state liberals are planning to flood the state of Georgia in order to undermine the integrity of our election and vote in our upcoming Senate runoffs. This practice should be made illegal, and I'm calling on Governor Kemp to call a special session to make it so. I had another thought on this. There's a couple things. One, as they said, it's fraud to move there just for purposes of voting and leaving. Think about the Equal Protection Clause. People are going to say, what do you mean? Well, Equal Protection Clause would be that some people are getting to vote in multiple places and getting multiple votes, whereas ethical voters are only getting their one vote. Think about that. You're getting votes in multiple places. You know, or someone is, an unethical voter is. Me, little old Hank Jones, is only getting his three votes. Now I'm down to two votes now that my daughter's out of the house. Yeah, I admit it. I fill out my wife's ballot for her at her request. She signs it. I ask her to look at it and review it, but she does give it to me to fill out. I'm going to make no bones about it. The wonderful Dr. Walter Williams pretty much says the same thing. Says, my wife doesn't want to do that, so I do it for her. So a good husband does that, by the way. But no, think about it. The Equal Protection Clause. Someone getting to vote in multiple elections versus those who obey the rules and vote in their state election. I mean, essentially, you could vote. You know, you could even do it this way, and I'm thinking sleazily. You Democrats that might be listening, help me out on this, because you guys probably know the playbook a little better than I do. You could vote early or vote in a primary to undermine a strong candidate from the other party, move to another state to vote in the general election, and then move to another state for any runoff. So you can literally vote for senators and representatives from three states. Now, in this case, they're not casting additional presidential ballots, although don't be surprised if they find a few between now and then and try to use them. But yeah, I think that would fall under the Equal Protection Clause. Hawkeye Mike, I think, is on the phone, and I'm going to bring him in here, but he might be able to go a little further. But yeah, here's what we're basically saying is going to happen.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care."
Okay, we got to make one little thing. He's not looking for a soul. Well, he is looking for a soul to steal, but he's substitute ballot for the word fiddle in this particular case. He's not looking to win with a fiddle. He's buying souls with ballots. So you gotta. Now, I trust my listeners, because I assume my listeners are conservative. At least I hope so. I trust my conservative listeners to understand that concept. He's not actually stealing or using a fiddle in this case. He's just going to use ballots to buy souls. But you get my point. I'm pretty sure you get my point. Basically boils down to this. As I said before, if they didn't have double standards, they would have no standards. Boils down to that. Now, from the sixth state of Massachusetts, state Democrats are pushing extreme acts under Roe versus Wade that will allow abortions at any time in a pregnancy, including right up to delivery time. And it would excuse medical professionals from having to provide care for infants that survive the procedure. Now, this is beyond sick, and maybe my question is even sicker. The only question I have out of this, because I'm flabbergasted that they would actually – I'm not surprised by the abortion at any time. I'm surprised that there would be a clause in there that would allow medical professionals to not provide care for an infant that survives the procedure. So really the only question I have out of this may be too soon, we may need a rim shot here. Here's the question. How many of these deaths will be classified as COVID related? Okay, moving on. I'm sorry. That was in poor taste. I know. On the foreign policy / immigration front, Guatemala has asked the U.S. to give amnesty to that country's 700,000-plus migrants that are here in the U.S. I'm going to assume some are here legally. The reason? Flooding in that country has caused, get this, as many as 150 deaths. Seriously, 150 deaths from flooding. And their answer is, here, take these 700 plus thousand off our hands and you foot the bill, United States. Here's the thing, though. This is the kind of thing that's at stake in this recount and going through the election process. Stuff like that. I mean, not just giving amnesty, but giving votes to illegals, allowing illegals to vote, or just anybody to vote. That's the kind of stuff that's at stake here. Now, there was a Rasmussen poll conducted November 5th through 8th. Get this, only 56% of those who said they voted for Joe Biden voted definitively for Joe Biden, while 29% admitted that what they were doing was casting a vote against President Donald Trump. Now, on the other side, 90% of Trump voters say they voted for Trump, with just 8% saying they voted against Biden. honestly, I'm not even sure what to make of this. Seriously, listen, think of it. 56% voted for Biden and 29% voted against Trump. So what the hell were the other 15% even voting for? Now, on the Republican side, only 2% were other. So I guess what it actually says is this. Biden doesn't have, if he's the eventual winner, he really doesn't have the mandate that he thinks or the media thinks. Speaking of Twitter, as Indy Queen was mentioning, in the last 24 hours, Twitter labeled 8 posts from President Trump with fact-check labels. My guess, it's really because QPJ probably called an early lid on the day, as they call them, and so they really had to occupy themselves with Trump derangement syndrome. They still have it. Yeah, I even saw an article somewhere, somebody talking about watch out for Trump in 2024. Damn right. If he doesn't win this, watch out for him in 2024. Anyone remember the first debate, by the way? Despite my best efforts to forget? Yeah, well, it seems Chris Wallace pushed Joe Biden into a falsehood, although it probably wasn't his intent. Remember he asked QPJ, Quid Pro Joe, if he would pledge not to declare victory until the vote was independently certified, and Biden said yes, emphatically. My guess is he had his fingers crossed behind his back. I'd further guess that he does that a lot. I mean, I should be checking to see where his arm is at all times. Well, but Wallace, on the other hand, probably doesn't even understand what a fool he and the media, along with Biden, made themselves out to be in that. But again, with them, the end justifies the means. Now, yesterday on the Hugh Hewitt show, Texas GOP Senator Ted Cruz came right out and basically said Democrat senators don't have the guts to stand up to Chuck Schumer. Really? He was referring to West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who had an appearance on Fox News. Cruz was pointing out that by saying he won't vote to end the filibuster or pack the court, that he's in essence campaigning for Georgia Democrats in the two runoffs by making it appear as though he would be the moderate voice of reason. Almost saying that Democrats winning Georgia wouldn't be anything to fear because he's going to be moderate. But Cruz pointed out, whatever Schumer says, right or wrong, the other Dems pretty much don't have the guts to stand up to him, even when he goes against his promises or good sense policies. Ted, my man, this is nothing new. This is really nothing new. Over on Breitbart, John Nolte called out Kevin Ruth of the New York Times. Kevin Ruth is calling factual election news misinformation. He said basically that Facebook not putting fact-check labels or allowing actual election news to be posted is allowing right-wing disinformation. Yeah, he actually said that. He said Facebook allowing verified news favorable to the GOP is misinformation. It's right-wing misinformation, even when it's true. Now, Nolte cited 4 actual news stories that were true. They just happen to favor GOP candidates or interests. So Roos's answer, disinformation. I mean, what the hell? What the hell? I know I sound like Charles Grodin in Midnight Run. What the hell? What the hell? That's what I sound like, I guess. But, you know, it's fact. I mean, Roos literally said allowing those stories is right-wing misinformation. Let me see if I can. I had that pulled up for a while. I actually had it pulled up. Oh, here it is. Let me get these. Let me get the stories that Roos said, cited, and Nolte pointed out were real. No, these are the posts of Donald Trump that were labeled with fact-checker labels. Seriously, Facebook does that all the time. You go on there now and, I mean, you go on there and say, I puked last night. Facebook would fact check it, probably. I don't know. Gosh, where did I find it? It was on Breitbart. Oh, whatever. It was a good story, and it was, he cited factual stories that Kevin Roos called out. Oh, here we go. Here we got it. Okay, here are the story, the four stories. Okay. Here are the links that he said. The Daily Wire, Republican in Michigan goes from loser to winner after technical glitch was fixed. Officials urge confidence in the system. Fact, it was just a factual story. Ruth said, but they shouldn't have allowed it. Breitbart News, AG William Barr authorizes DOJ to look into voting irregularities. Ruth said, by allowing that, that's right-wing disinformation. He acknowledged later that those are true news stories, but he doesn't care. Bongino.com, Michigan legislature holds rare emergency session to investigate election irregularities. It was a factual story. Kevin Roos shouldn't be allowed up there. And then when Loeffler and Perdue, among others, called on Georgia's Secretary of State to resign over election problems, Kevin Roos said, no, that should not be allowed. That's right-wing disinformation or misinformation. That's what it's coming to. Whether it is Twitter, whether it is Facebook, whether it is faux Fox News, whether it doesn't really matter, whether it's your local paper, it really comes down to we don't even care if it's true. It's truth isn't what's being sought here, folks. Favorable information is what's being sought. Truth got absolutely nothing to do with it. That's what we're fighting against. Now, because I'm overloaded on this, I'm going to just get right into sports. Get right to it. Start with college basketball. Gonzaga has opened the season. The first AP poll is number one. Gonzaga, yeah. Hawkeyes play them this year, by the way. Gonzaga number one, Baylor number two, Villanova number three, Virginia number four, and Iowa number five. Iowa was the first four teams all got at least one first place vote. Iowa was the one team that did not in the top five. Also from the Big Ten, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan State, Ohio State, Rutgers, and Michigan. So yeah, seven. Half of the Big Ten is in the top 25 poll. Yeah, that's going to be a good game. Iowa plays Gonzaga. I'm trying to remember the date. It's not the 25th. The season starts the 25th. They played Gonzaga in Sioux Falls, I think it is, South Dakota. There's like a little – there's a summer arena there. Iowa's Luka Garza was voted preseason player of the year. He was in a lot of the – he was player of the year last year in several different organizations, just not the – he was not the Wooden Award winner, but he won a bunch of other ones. So, yeah, he's a first-team All-America, obviously. The Iowa roster, for you Hawk fans, this actually is a pretty strong roster. I mean, essentially, the starting five is back. Garza, Frederick, C.J. Frederick, Connor McCaffrey, Joe Wieskamp, Jordan Bohannon. Now, Bohannon did not start. He only played 10 games last year so that he could redshirt. But you also have back Joe Toussaint, who was a starting point guard. Other players, Patrick McCaffrey is going to be back. The Murray twins, Keenan Murray's twin sons, Jack Nungy's back. They brought in a center from England, Josh Ogundele, Tony Perkins, Aaron Ulis, younger brother of, what was his name, Tyrone Ulis, out of Kentucky. So, yeah, it's a pretty good-looking roster, some good youth, but they're going to have the youth is going to have time to develop. Looking forward to it. See, 2 weeks from today, the season starts. So that's the basketball news. Football, man, bunch of cancellations this last couple weeks. Alabama LSU is canceled coming up. Memphis Navy canceled. Louisiana Monroe and Arkansas State. California, Arizona State might be canceled. Pac-12 already had two of their first week's games canceled last week. Tennessee versus Texas A&M is postponed. Yeah, again, if there's been a spike in COVID cases, but I mean, at some point they got to push on with this. You know, you don't even have, and this is where the NCAA is worthless. This is where it is worthless. No uniformity. None. No uniformity. I mean, one league's got a requirement of 7 days, another one's 10. Nick Saban tested positive and then quickly did a couple negative tests to be able to be on the sidelines for their game against Georgia. Meanwhile, the Big Ten's rule is 21 days. Wisconsin's already missed two games. Now, they are supposedly back on the field, but, man, if Wisconsin can't go this weekend, they're literally not eligible for the Big Ten championship game. UCLA says this weekend their game's still on, but they do have a player among their three positive tests. Utah is canceled. Wow. In recruiting news, ESPN 300, top 300 quarterback Shedeur Sanders has blown off his previous commitment. Yeah, he was going to go to Florida Atlantic. He's now going to Jackson State, which happens to be the place where his father is the head coach. He's the number 60 overall recruit in the class of 2021, which really has me wondering, why was he committing to Florida Atlantic? Really, I mean, I don't get that. I get him going to his dad's school, but I don't get why he was only going to Florida Atlantic. I can't believe that he's the top 60, number 60 ranked recruit, and he's not going anywhere. I mean, that Florida Atlantic was the, you know, Deion must have something against Florida State these days. Baseball, Tony La Russa was rehired by the White Sox as manager, and it wasn't very popular. And evidently, when he was arrested for a DUI late October, I guess, Maricopa County in Arizona. Yeah. He said, "I'm a Hall of Famer. Don't you know who I am?" Oh. He flashed his World Series ring at a police officer. People. Oh. Now, look. I announced last week about Amir Smith-Marset from the Hawkeyes. Hawkeye wide receiver. Having his DUI, going 70 and a 30. And I said, you know, this is not good. And it made the program look bad. He came out and he gave a pretty good Twitter apology. I don't think that was required, but he did it. But Tony La Russa flashing the World Series ring and saying, "Don't you know who I am? I'm a Hall of Famer." They were actually filed one day before the team officially hired him on October 29th. That's when the legal charges were filed. He was also he pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor DUI in Florida in 2007. Said he appeared incoherent, referred multiple times to his Hall of Famer credentials, and expressed mistrust in blood alcohol levels. Yeah, I guess he did. I mean, folks, that's what we have. I mean, we either have guys that want to kneel for the national anthem, or they want to tell arresting officers that they're Hall of Famers. My God. Also in baseball, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, he said he is not going to punish Justin Turner for leaving isolation after his positive COVID test to join his teammates on the field after the World Series win for the Dodgers over the Tampa Bay Rays. Yeah, I don't quite get that either. I mean, I get that he had a positive test and that he was isolated. He could be, but man, the team won. I mean, presumably they had between now and January or February to get well. I mean, God, let the guy enjoy it. He didn't get to play in the game. I think he actually got pulled from the game. So, yeah, I don't know why they were even thinking of that. I mean, what? Why? What are they going to do? The NBA, I know I'm going to try and make this quick because I'm really disgusted with the NBA. Board of Governors has unanimously approved an amended deal clearing the way for a 72-game season. It would actually start. Wow. Free agency would begin Friday, November 20th, 2 weeks after the draft next week. Salary cap will be $109.1 million. Luxury tax will be $132.6 million, which were the same numbers for this past season. They're going to have 72 games, and I believe they said they are going to start in December. I'm not sure fans are going to be all that thrilled about it. Welcome T. Bodie to the chat room, folks. Yeah, I'm not sure that fans are going to be all that excited for their return. I really don't. I just don't. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm way off here. But you know what? People are tired of, you know, the social, I mean, the fake fans, the social justice stuff, having BLM on the court, you know, etched onto the court. I think people are just tired of it. So they just don't want it anymore. They're just enough. So I'm guessing we're going to see down viewership. Let's just put it that way. Back to college football. Penn State is going to keep Sean Clifford as their starting quarterback, but they will work back up Will Levis into the rotation. Whew, boy, anybody that saw that Penn State game last weekend, God, that look miserable. I mean, I know that Big Ten teams, you know, it's sort of been upside down. Michigan's looking poor. The Hawkeyes haven't exactly been lighting it up, although they did get a win Saturday. Man, Penn State just looked lost against Maryland. And this is a Maryland team that lost by 40 to Northwestern. 40. Didn't score a touchdown. So they're playing in Lincoln this week. Nebraska's 0-2. They missed that game against Wisconsin the week before this past week. That's not, God, I mean, who would have ever thought, let's put it this way, in my lifetime growing up, I would never have guessed that Penn State, Nebraska, playing in November would have been an easy game to miss. I mean, I'm talking not even flipping through it for 5 seconds. I mean, they're the 84th ranked scoring offense. Playing Nebraska, who can't score much either. But, yeah, they're going to stick with Sean Clifford. I get it. I mean, the Hawkeyes have stuck with Spencer Petras. What are you going to do? I mean, you know, you got to remember, these guys didn't have the spring camp. Clifford's a second-year starter, but Petras didn't have spring camp, didn't have fall camp. Not easy to just pull a guy and say, you know, we decided to go a different direction. Speaking of Iowa, Deron McKinney is the fourth Hawkeye in the last 2 weeks to announce going into the transfer portal. He's appeared on special teams, but he hasn't played. Oh, T. Bodie just put in the chat room. I don't sit there and look at the internet while I'm. Maryland and Ohio State is canceled this weekend due to COVID. Yikes. That's a big yikes. Wow. Let me see if I can pull that one up. I'm sure I'm going to be able to. Not seeing it in the front page of ESPN, but that doesn't mean anything. Yeah, Maryland versus number 3 Ohio State off due to COVID. Now, will that be rescheduled? Maryland paused all team-related activities today because of an elevated number of coronavirus cases within the program. 8 Maryland players have tested positive. Now, again, are they in the red zone? My feeling is, if they're not in the red zone, it's a forfeit. I mean, we cannot have diverse records. We can't have records where one team has played 8 games, another team has played 6. That's not It's the third game this year, Wisconsin's two cancellations. After that, Maryland plays November 21st at Michigan State, which, again, with the 21-day protocol, I say that Graham Mertz from Wisconsin is still in the protocol, but that he's probably going to play against Michigan. But wow, that's huge. Ohio State, Maryland. Oh, here's more basketball. Michigan State coach Tom Izzo tested positive for COVID-19. Meanwhile, Syracuse coach Jim Boeheim is facing a lawsuit from a victim's family in a fatal car crash in 2019. Now, in that, he was not held at fault. They said he may have been speeding, but that the accident was probably unavoidable due to weather conditions. Minnesota's men's basketball team has paused activities for COVID. So, yeah, this COVID-19 stuff obviously is Ben Roethlisberger from the Steelers on the COVID list. Although he's not been confirmed as a positive case, it's about tracing. May have had contact with someone who did test positive. Okay, let's just get this one out of the way because it's just a story I don't even want to do, but it's relevant to sports. NFL owners approve playoff and diversity measures. Planning for the possibility that the 2020 regular season could be cut short by COVID-19, possibly moving to 16-team versus 12-team playoffs. And they're not going to have already in a bubble. But they also finalized a 10-month discussion aimed at boosting the likelihood that teams will seek out, consider, and hire minority coaching and executive candidates. They approved a resolution to reward teams with draft picks if one of their minority coaches or personnel people is hired to be a head coach or general manager. Now, look, I have talked about this before ad nauseum. You're going to have, out of this, you're going to have guys that interview at places where they don't really want to get hired. And you're going to have teams interviewing guys they don't really want to hire, but feel like they have to. And then they're going to get rewarded with draft picks. So they decided to incentivize an expansion of the candidate pool. They will receive 2 third-round compensatory draft picks if someone from their organization is hired or promoted to a head coach or general manager job. Now, entering this season, NFL had 4 minority head coaches and 2 minority general managers. I get it. You want more, if possible. But again, you're making the assumption that everyone wants to be a head coach or a general manager. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're not a fit at a certain place. I mean, it's insane to just make these arbitrary decisions based on skin color. I mean, they think they're being woke and all that stuff. They're not. They're pigeonholing themselves into a hiring based solely on skin color. It's moronic. It really is. Hey, I'm going to bring in Hawkeye Mike. He's on the phone. Mike, you there?
I am, Hank. How's it going?
Good. How are you, sir?
Well, you know, it's been a boring last week or so, right?
A little bit.
Anything happening?
Yeah, no kidding. Just a bit. That's all. So what's up? What you thinking? What's your thoughts on the whole election stuff?
Well, two things mainly. I do think that there was fraud going on, very likely on a pretty grand scale. But it's not just fraud. I would remind you that one of the big things in Pennsylvania, but I think also in some other states, was the violation of the existing election laws. And on a couple different points. first of all, the extension in Pennsylvania of the time to receive mail-in ballots from Election Day to, I believe, November 6th, which was done by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and then the governor implemented it. He wanted to do it.
Right.
That runs into a real constitutional issue because they just, on a fiat, basically decided to do that when the law said they had to be in by Election Day. Well, the reason that that matters on a federal scale is because the U.S. Constitution says that it's up to the state legislatures to decide. So the question becomes, if these ballots, all these ballots that came in after November 3rd, if they were done in violation of the law, and the Supreme Court was to rule that, you know, it's up to the state legislatures, not the governor, not the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, to set the laws, then what's the remedy? You tell me. There was another violation of the law done, as we all know, and it was apparently featured in Philadelphia, although I've heard this happened in some other states too, like in Atlanta, Georgia, Detroit, where observers were under the law allowed to be there present to observe the count, and they weren't allowed to do it in a meaningful way. Keeping someone across the room is not allowing them to observe. They can't read the ballot. The reason for that is that they need to be able to see if those are legal votes. Well, they were kept out. Why were they kept out? Again, what's the remedy if that law was violated? This isn't just fraud, you know, in terms of fake votes or something. These are violations of election law, and the question then becomes, what's the remedy? So then my second point is, do I think the courts are going to throw all these ballots out, or find that there's enough fraud to change the result of the election? And I have to say, I think that that's highly unlikely. So I think we're looking at President Biden.
But why do you say that? Why would it be? I mean, either they follow the law or they don't, correct?
But, it requires a certain amount of intestinal fortitude. You know, you could be talking hundreds of thousands of ballots. And look, if the law is to have teeth, and the court finds that these violations occurred, then they could say every ballot that was counted without a Republican there to observe, or every ballot that came in after the closing of polls on November 3rd should be tossed if you can't go out you just have to figure out what those numbers are. If the law has any meaning, then they should be tossed. The question is whether a court, the U.S. Supreme Court, for instance, would have the balls to do that. I just don't know.
Yeah, good point.
And that,
you know,
they can easily say, yeah, there was fraud, but we're not going to just throw out all these votes by people or something like that. You know, but that means that the law has no teeth. But I'm just kind of prepared that in the final analysis, as they say, the courts aren't gonna reverse these election results, and I think it's a shame.
Absolutely, it's a shame.
Because I mean, the problem really was that this you know wasn't dealt with prior to the election results coming in. I know that they tried to go to the Supreme Court and it was like a 4-4 split. They wouldn't take it. That was before Amy Coney Barrett got on the court. And
right.
So it might have been different if she'd been on there. But, you know, so nothing happened. And it was kind of, it was baked in that we're going to have these results. What I was surprised about a little bit was, how brazen they were, particularly in Philadelphia, apparently, in saying that the observers that are allowed to be there under the law couldn't basically come and observe in any meaningful way. We'll see what happens with that. This is, you know, these are just violations of the election laws. These aren't
right.
even fraud matters. And the question then becomes, you know, okay, that the observers weren't allowed to be there. All these votes came in after close of polls on November 3rd. What's the remedy?
And the normal remedy.
And will the courts, you know, enforce that remedy?
Right.
Well, we can stay tuned and see what happens, but I just see a think out coming, kind of. But you know, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I worry about that. I mean, how can they? But like you say, the law either has teeth or the law doesn't have, or they don't observe it. If they don't observe the law, uphold the law, enforce the law, then really what's the point of having a law?
It's a dead letter. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard an interesting talk from on Brian Kilmeade's show the other day, Jonathan Turley, formerly of CBS News. I forgot who he's with now. Kind of always. But he was saying, look, there are other systemic problems that have gone on for a long time. He says it's not just, it's not just bringing in truckloads of ballots. That's just one. He said, but there are things like allowing ballots that aren't postmarked at all that come in late, not checking the accuracy of signatures, or in some cases allowing ballots that aren't signed. You can't allow ballots that aren't signed. That's the, again, that's the law. He says, but these are systemic issues.
That's where the observing comes in. You can't identify these things if Republican observers or Democratic observers aren't close enough to see the ballots as they're being counted. And this was not done. And we could be talking, certainly just in Philadelphia alone, you could be talking, hundreds of thousands of ballots.
Yeah.
And that's all the difference in the world in who won that state.
And the other thing, Wisconsin was the one that really got me is when, at 3:30 in the morning, Steve Dace had retweeted a tweet from someone that said, basically, Trump leads by 108,000 votes. There are 188,000 ballots remaining. Biden needs to win 79% of those. Now, statistically, no, you knew that wasn't. And people were actually saying things like, well, maybe it was just a ballot dump. What do you mean a ballot dump? I mean, if they are literally, how could they be holding that many ballots?
Also, why does this always happen to the Democrats' benefit? They're holding ballots to see how things are going and then dump in when they figure out what they need. It just stinks to high heaven. But again, the problem is, can you prove it? And you have to have some pretty good evidence. But I mean, the whole thing stinks to high heaven. What was going on in Milwaukee? What was going on? Well, the same thing happened in Michigan too. Trump was up, and then all of a sudden maybe it was Wayne. Why is Wayne County always coming in late? Why is Milwaukee always coming in at the very end? Why aren't their votes out there? Then you wouldn't have this situation arise where a Republican lead gets wiped out in the wee hours of the night when you have, like you say, a ballot dump. And of course, I can't prove that there was fraud here, but when it happens every time, for the Democratic Party, it just make it wonder. And a lot of people point out, you got Trump losing these states and losing the election, supposedly, where Republicans are gaining probably somewhere between 10 to 14 House seats, and it looks like I'm assuming that in the end they'll probably hold those Georgia seats. They'll keep their majority in the Senate, and so how can the elections otherwise going well? And then these things are, it's just, some of this stuff just looks manufactured.
Well, like either the senator or the congressional candidate who said in Michigan, who said, President Trump got 62% in this area in 2016. And now we're expected to believe that Biden got 62%, that they reversed that much. He says, I'm sorry. And yet the candidate himself did well there. I mean, it's just, as he said, it defies logic. Completely defies logic. T. Bodie just pointed out there are 11,000 notarized affidavits of firsthand witnessed voter fraud that have been submitted. 11,000.
Right, and I think that some time has to be taken here, and I know that Democrats are all, don't like it, but because we have to know, even if there's not enough to overturn the selection, we have to know what the hell happened here. We have to know what kind of scale this fraud was. And we also have to address these issues of just blatant ignoring of election laws. And this can never, at a minimum, this can never happen again. And things have to be done to ensure that, which is even if they don't overturn it. I mean, I think the Supreme Court has to come out and say, You got to follow the letter of the law as it's written by the state legislatures and enacted by them. And that's it. And if you don't, you know, we're going to toss votes out.
Yeah,
even if they don't do it this time going forward. And you can't change the rules like at the 11th hour, which is what a lot of these states did, you know, in the last couple months, you know, under the guise of COVID. You know, that's why they started just mailing out ballots to people, whether they wanted them or not. That should not be done.
Exactly.
And all the ballots, and if you do have mail-in ballots, fine. They all have to be in by the close of polls or they don't count. So, you know, that means you better get those things postmarked 10 days ahead if you want to make sure that they're in there to be counted. Because if they're not, they don't count. You know, I'm just talking about ways to ensure a fair count that's not fraudulent.
Yeah. I mean, even early voting, you have to wonder how much stuff came in the way it did. I mean, early voting, they have those counts. Why in some states do they hold those until it's voting? You know, why haven't they counted them beforehand? I mean, they had all these counts from all over the place of how much, you know, voter registration had changed here and had changed there and how much had been cast. And yet, on election night, they stopped the counts in those places at midnight. They just stopped the count. Why did they just stop the count?
You have Republican leads, and then all of a sudden the vote just shuts down for a few hours. It's like they're looking to figure out what they need to do. I mean, it just looks, it just smells. The whole thing smells. And this happened not just in one state. It happened in Michigan. It happened in Wisconsin. And I think it may have happened in Pennsylvania, although I'm not positive. But and then all of a sudden, right after that, they open up and you got a dump of ballots in favor of Biden. In huge numbers, that just enough to overturn the result, just enough to allow him to take the lead and win the state, supposedly.
Right. Well, there are some states, you know, supposedly in Arizona, Biden's lead is back down under 1%. And at one place I saw, there were several where
it's under 13,000. It's about a half a percent now. It's 13,000.
Yeah.
This is a state, by the way, that was called on election night, and you can talk about Fox News if you want a little bit. They called it and on election night, and the lead at that time was over 200,000. So now it's down to like 12,000 and some change, half a percent. There's still votes being counted. I don't know whether it's going to be enough to overturn it, but it's going to be razor thin, and there'll probably be a recount. What a mistake calling that state. And Fox, you know, there's been a lot of angst about Fox. I mean, I think you know that. Among conservatives. And I think part of the problem is that you know, Fox, I'm not, you know, we're not talking about people like Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham, but their polling, which was like a lot of the mainstream polling, way off. And the people that they use to make calls at night, they're all Democrats.
Yeah, the guy that runs the
that
poll and election.
Michnin or whatever the hell his name.
Is a Democrat. He supported Hillary. He's a donor to Hillary's campaign. I mean, how does that, you know? Now look again. It points out this. We're not saying that Fox News or anybody else is what changed votes, but again, when they call it at certain times, there were places. People that said races were being called while they were still, you know, polls were still open. They have said they would not do that. Again, they went back to doing it.
Well,
you know,
I don't know for sure if they called it that quickly or if it was after the polls closed. But
but the other places, there were places that
when you got a 12,000 vote margin out of 3.5 million votes cast, what the hell are you doing calling it on election night? When there's, you know, 1.5 million votes left to count. I mean, look what's happened. There was a major screw up there.
Yeah,
and,
there was.
You know, just like all the polls were wrong. I mean, it's just, everything about the press and the way that the elections were done in heavily Democratic areas just reeks of bias and fraud and shirking of the law. And it's just, you know, I think the average Republican, you know, 72 million now people that voted for Trump see this. And, I mean, I don't know what's – I mean, you know, it's not just going to be like we're just going to accept things, you know.
And why are they saying – and, again, why are we hearing that we need unity? And, again, the election has not been certified. And remember, well, I read earlier, Biden said he would not declare victory until the election had been independently certified. And yet he's declared victory. They've had their rally.
Right.
I mean,
well,
that's almost
the reason he did is because the press has declared
right.
him a winner.
Right. But again, he knows that. He should know that after
48 years.
Thing,
that's another thing about Fox that's causing. They were just right part of the consortium on, like, I think it was Saturday when they all declared Biden the winner and started referring to him as president-elect. And Fox was right there, even though you still had razor-thin margins in places like Georgia and Pennsylvania.
And places that are going to have mandatory
Arizona,
recounts.
And lawsuits were being filed, and yet they still went ahead and did that. Fox did this. And then I don't know if you watched much Fox on Saturday, but it was like a love fest to Biden, just like it might have been watching CNN or something.
Yeah.
And I just – look, it was news, I suppose, that they decided to declare him the president-elect. But why – with the love fest that went on then, you know, what the hell was that about?
Well, you know, there's
a lot of people that are pissed off with Fox News.
I just saw somewhere, and I don't remember where I saw it because, you know, again, I'm flying all over the internet for various things. Somewhere I read that Fox News's numbers now, viewer numbers, are lower than CNN and MSDNC. I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, I gotta believe
you know,
like, a Hannity or a Kilmeade or an Ingram are gonna walk away at some point and take a lot of people with them. I mean, Newsmax is gonna
I think they ought to be worried about that. Yeah, because you got One American News and Newsmax. You can go and watch.
You got Blaze TV with Glenn Beck.
Right. There you go.
And Steve Dace. By the way, you know, I mean.
Right, and I would also another good website to go to is a place called Town Hall, and
okay.
They have good stories, but they also have a live blog which has good info. So I'd commend to all your listeners out there, and to you, Hank, that you check out Town Hall, and
okay.
You know, I think you find some good information there.
But on the
bright side of things here. Even if Trump loses, I do think Republicans are going to keep the Senate, which is very good news because all this crap about court packing and everything, it's all going to go down by the wayside. Republicans unexpectedly made gains. As I said, I think it's going to be 10 to 14 seats when they were predicting it would go the other way. And Nancy Pelosi may not have – you know, do you know that when she got elected Speaker last time, 15 Democrats didn't vote for her, but she won anyway because Democrats had a bigger majority. Now, someone pointed out that 10 of those Democrats didn't vote for her back. If they don't vote for her this time, she isn't going to have the vote.
She is catching the blame. Yeah, she is catching the blame for those losses. AOC and the squad AOC and the squad have come out and said, what's this stuff about Democrats not being pulled left over our dead bodies? You know, I mean,
and there's a bunch of Democratic seats that they held just barely too.
Yeah.
So this could have gone completely the other way, and I guarantee you, if Biden is president in 2022, when you have the midterms, Republicans are only going to need 5 or 6 seats. It's going to be a Republican House after the election. The out of party always gains seats, and the president's party always loses. Obama, 2010. Democrats lost 63 seats in control of the House. In the 1994, of course, was when the Republicans swept in after Clinton won in 92.
Right.
In 2018, Democrats took the House back while Trump was president. It's in the midterms, so the Republicans are almost certain to take control of the House after the midterm elections in 2022, and they're going to be able to probably all you need is maybe 4 or 5 Democrats to not vote for whatever the Democrats want to do, and they won't have the votes in the House.
Yep, exactly.
So
and
the state legislatures all stayed Republican. Every chamber they held, they kept, which is going to be great because you're going to be doing reapportionment coming up in the next term. And in fact,
yep.
I think Republicans actually gained two state houses. So, you know, overall, you know, the Republicans did unexpectedly well in the elections, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah, and that's why I think people are not buying the presidential numbers. You know, I mean,
exactly.
How can
that's part of it too? That's part of it too.
I'm under no illusion that the whole thing about, you know, Biden, you know, basically they shut down everyone else's candidacy in, you know, February, March, because I think they figured out at that point we got to cheat for one person, and if we're spreading it off right now, it's not going to work. But we, you know, Biden had the name, and they could get behind him to cheat. But number one, will he still be around in 2024? Number two, without looking like a blithering idiot, and then number three, a Kamala Harris. I'm sorry, or Kamala Harris, however it's pronounced. There's no way she would, if she becomes president, there's no way she would win election in 2024. I'm sorry, she just wouldn't.
As I told our mutual friend who we roomed with, who is of the left of center persuasion, shall we say?
Correct.
He had posted something on Facebook about, you know, Biden winning, and I said, if Biden's won, then, you know, I wish him the best because we only have one president, and, you know, you don't want, for the good of the country, a president to fail. And I said, I promise you, if he's going to be the president, I will pray for his health every day. I promise you, because we know what the alternative is.
Yep, exactly. I will pray for him fervently. Yes, it's 8:30, Joe.
Unless you want President Kamala, you will be praying for this man's health if he becomes president.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that won't be pretty. It will not be pretty. It wouldn't matter what the numbers are because, you know, you think Obama made frivolous executive orders. You can only imagine what Kamala Harris or Kamala Harris, however,
oh,
I don't care. I don't care how it's pronounced, actually, just for the record. So. Sorry to be disrespectful
yeah,
about that.
Kamala, whatever. Yeah.
Chameleon.
How about Kami? How about
yeah,
Kami?
Exactly. Kami. Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. Quick football. Yeah, quick football. Yeah. What did you think of the Hawks last Saturday?
Well, much better, obviously. You know, things seem to go their way finally in the game. And they I thought the defense was really good.
Yeah.
And obviously the offense did well too, and Petras, you know, had a better performance. But you know, they got a real test on Friday night against the Gophers, I think. And so we'll see what happens. But they're gonna have to play mistake free. They can win it up there, Minnesota. I haven't quite got a gauge on them.
I'm not sold on their defense at all. Number one.
No.
They got
the explosive offense. Yeah.
You know, but I'm not sold on their defense. And their offense, I think their offense can, you know, their offense is not as good as it was last year. I know they had one of their receivers is gone. They still have Rashad Bateman. And Mo Ibrahim is a good back, but I don't think that he can, you know, I don't think he's unstoppable. I mean, you know, people are talking like, oh, he's unstoppable. He did this against Illinois, you know. I mean, let's not forget what Graham Mertz did against Illinois. And the guy probably had COVID while he was doing it, you know. I mean, you know, so, yeah, I'm not all that sold on their – you know, they went into Maryland and just traded points and then, you know, losing in overtime on a missed extra point. I mean, that kind of thing. I mean, I'm just not all that sold on them as far as a – you know, I'm not saying they can't win, that Minnesota can't win, but I am saying I'm not writing the Hawks off at all. But I mean, the season, you know, the Big Ten is literally upside down. Other than Ohio State, it's upside down. I mean, you're talking about 0-3 Penn State.
0-3. Yeah, losing to Maryland. Now, so that is confirmed then, because I heard you say it earlier. I didn't know that the Maryland-Ohio State game is off.
It is off.
It's off.
Yeah,
okay,
it's off,
well,
so.
You know, we knew these things could happen, I guess. It's interesting, you know, is Wisconsin finally getting back to playing this week?
So far, it looks that way, but I haven't
seen. How many more games can they miss?
They can't miss anymore. They've missed their two games.
They've called off two, right? So if they don't,
yeah,
they have to play.
They've got to play six. They've got to play six,
yeah,
or they are done.
Not in the championship. Yeah.
Well,
you
doesn't
know,
mean
one thing that's great, you know, we're in the heart of football season and everything, but do you realize we're just 2 weeks away from Iowa basketball home opener?
I know.
November 25.
Who do we open against?
I don't know off the top of my head who it is. I don't think it's anybody in, you know, too impressive.
Because I'm trying to look for the schedule. And it doesn't.
But they have a couple big games early. Play Gonzaga over in Sioux Falls. And then they also in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, they're going to be playing North Carolina in Carver-Hawkeye. So there may not be any fans there, but they got those two games. I don't know. In North Carolina, I don't think was that great last year, so I don't know what to expect. That Gonzaga is kind of the consensus number one or two, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, consensus
right
number one. But I mean, look at this week's games in football. You have Indiana at Michigan State, 3-0 Indiana against 1-2 Michigan State. I mean, you know, Indiana can almost afford to lose that game. Yeah, Illinois at Rutgers. I think Rutgers is going to crush them. Penn State at Nebraska.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're playing for best loser team. Wisconsin at Michigan
could be
good. But
Nebraska could do it. Penn State could be 0-4.
Yeah.
I mean,
Wisconsin and Michigan
have some real problems.
I'll tell you, Wisconsin also got problems. Michigan. My God, they're leaving that defense out there. They're leaving
their coaches in trouble right now. You got so many coaches in trouble. You know, Harbaugh, Scott Frost maybe. James Franklin, is he in trouble?
I think a Penn State coach is always in trouble just by what's happened in their program since.
Right.
You know.
But they're on Tom Caker's website, Iowa Rivals. There's the talk on the boards there is that I thought was great. Is that they're dumping on Nebraska? They're dumping on Scott Frost, and there's even some suggestion that maybe they can get Urban Meyer. The delusion continues.
That continues
in Nebraska. In Nebraska,
that is
quite
possibly the funniest thing I've seen was that delusion
Nebraska. After the annual hopes for the national championship subside after the first loss of the year, which is usually the first game of the year, they start going into this kind of garbage. They think that Urban Meyer could be tempted to Nebraska. They really are living in fantasy land.
Yeah, you know, Wisconsin at Michigan could be good. If Wisconsin looks anything like they looked against Illinois and Michigan looks anything like they looked against both Indiana and Michigan State with those – I mean, Graham Mertz will tear that secondary apart. But here's the big game. Now, Ohio State-Maryland would have been a big game. But so here's the marquee game for this weekend in the Big Ten. Northwestern at Purdue. Think about that. You're looking at two
battle of undefeateds, aren't they?
Yeah, 3-0 and 2-0 because Purdue had that Wisconsin cancellation.
Right.
So, you know, think about that. That's the game that could decide the West champion.
We saw Northwestern up close in the Iowa game, and let me tell you, if Iowa had you know any kind of sharpness, they would have won that game. I mean, they blew a 17-0 lead.
Well,
Purdue's the same thing, right? You know, I mean, I should have last year's team, both Northwestern and Purdue would have been W's. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
And Petrus, you know, he's a work in progress. And he couldn't quite, you know, get it down, and that's what happened basically. And so I'm not really sold on either one of those two, but at the same time, one of those teams is going to win and be in pretty good shape in the Big Ten West.
Well, if you think about it this way, if Purdue wins, Purdue walks away from that not having to play Wisconsin. I mean, think about that.
Right.
They don't have because they already missed that game. Northwestern still is going to have to play Wisconsin. So in a sense, if Purdue wins that, Purdue skates to the West Championship. That's what they got left. They've got Minnesota, Illinois. They won't have Wisconsin. They've already played
Nebraska.
You know, so I don't know.
They'd have two crossover games, and I don't know.
Their crossovers.
Who did they beat last week? Was it?
They didn't play.
Who was their other win? I mean, I'm trying to remember.
Us and then Illinois.
Oh, Illinois.
So
okay, right.
So their crossover.
Crossover games. Yeah.
Rutgers and Indiana. So, whew.
Well, Indiana might be a problem. That's right. Indiana, the old Oak and Bucket, may actually matter this year.
Yeah, and frankly, Rutgers has a pulse. So, anyway, I got to run because we got to wrap things up. Thanks for getting on, man, and let's go Friday night, man.
You bet. Go Hawks.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
Yep.
Okay, so there we go. I love having Hawkeye Mike's perspective. He's a great roommate in college. Okay, folks, I didn't have the time that I wanted to give. I want to salute the veterans. I'm going to go quickly through my list. My father, a couple of my uncles, a couple of my brothers-in-law, one of my best friends growing up named Bill, my future son-in-law, three of my classmates, Joe, Ron, and Paul, John, my friend John, and those in his wedding party, Ted, Andy, and Mark, married couple friends of mine, Ann and Bill, and a couple other friends, Neil and Mike, Mike's son, my buddy Steve, aka Old Guy, a guy I named Rod, and there's a lot more. My friend Jody, her son. Thank our veterans, folks, and thanks for those who are here. T. Bodie, Indy Queen, even Brother Warren dropped in. Have a good one, folks.